Good morning, and thank you for being a little flexible with the schedule, given the weather situation. Case number 2023-20165, Bay Area Unitarian Universalist Church et al. Versus Harris County District Attorney et al. Ms. Taylor, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Sharon Taylor on behalf of the Plaintiff Appellants. The Texas Trespass Code puts property owners who wish to exclude licensed firearms to a choice. Use government restricted signage or accept a diminishment of your right to exclude. Plaintiffs assert a First Amendment challenge to this scheme, but the merits of that challenge are not before the court on this appeal. The court, therefore, need not decide what level of scrutiny applies, what government interest the scheme serves, or whether the scheme survives review. Rather, the sole question on this appeal is whether plaintiffs have standing to bring suit. As the Supreme Court has reminded us in recent decisions such as Thole, TransUnion, and Diamond Alternative Energy, it is important not to make standing law more complicated than it needs to be. The plaintiff must simply have a cognizable personal stake in the litigation and to be able to answer the question, what's it to you? Here, plaintiffs have demonstrated that they have multiple answers to this basic question. Both plaintiffs have posted at least some of the signs. That has led to numerous injuries. The signs conflict with plaintiffs' expressive preferences. The signage requirements also discriminate asymmetrically on the basis of content and viewpoint. Plaintiffs have also suffered a pocketbook injury because they have had to pay more for the signs. The signs also inflict reputational injury on plaintiffs, as unrebutted evidence in the record reflects. The church has also decided that the burden on its discretion caused by posting all 3006 and 3007 signs is too much. It has therefore accepted a diminishment of its right to exclude concealed firearms. That is a sacrifice of its property right. It is also a sacrifice of its freedom to associate for religious purposes, because allowing firearms into its religious gatherings is at odds with its beliefs in compassion and nonviolence. All of these amount to cognizable injuries if they are not self-inflicted. And an injury is not self-inflicted where the government conditions an important benefit on giving up a right. That is the familiar pattern in unconstitutional conditions cases where courts routinely find standing. Indeed, thousands of Texas property owners have made the common sense decision to post 3006 and 3007 signs in order to give legally sufficient notice of their intent to exclude. These property owners are not on frolic. They are adapting their conduct to have the fullest protection the law affords for their property rights. Plaintiffs are no different. They satisfy the Article 3 injury requirement. The other requirements for Article 3 standing are also readily satisfied here. On traceability, all that is required under key precedents of this court, including KP versus LeBlanc, is that defendants be among those who cause plaintiff's injury. Because none of the defendants deny that they enforce Sections 3006 and 3007 as written, this element is satisfied. It does not matter that defendants do not directly enforce the laws against plaintiffs, but rather that some of plaintiffs' injuries follow from third parties' predictable responses to the law. Indeed, the list of precedents of this court and the Supreme Court confirming standing where a third party is similarly involved is long. KP, General Land Office versus Biden, Book People, Bennett v. Speer, Department of Commerce versus New York, and Diamond Alternative Energy, to name a few. On redressability, if the district court were to enter a request to declaratory and injunctive relief, then the burdensome definitions of written communication in Section 3006(c)(3) and Section 3007(c)(3) could be invalidated, and plaintiffs could simply provide notice by oral or written communication in a reasonable manner of their choosing. That would cure their injury because it would release them from the horns of the dilemma that they currently face. Plaintiffs, therefore, have standing. I welcome the court's questions.
Thank you.
There's been an argument that there's not a real injury in this case because whether or not you post the signs in the manner that the government is requiring you to post them, that the police will come anyway. How do you respond to that?
I have two responses. One, when the record reflects that when the police arrive, they follow the law, which we would expect, and we have, and they have not disputed. So, for example, there's an incident report from the Cheddar's restaurant where the police arrived, having heard a report of an openly carried firearm. They identified the individual. They checked, and the record reflects this, they checked to see whether 307 signs were posted. Then they confirmed that the individual actually had the gun concealed, but that his shirt had lifted up momentarily so that the firearm was visible. And because then there was no arrest made, which is consistent with the fact that the restaurant had not posted 306 signs, so that concealed firearms were permitted on the premises. In other words, you still have to post a 307 sign in that instance in order for there to be a complete crime of trespass for the police to respond to and make an arrest. Now, the other point that I would make is that once you call the police, assuming that you've posted a non-conforming sign and somebody has moved past it onto your property, even if the police do, in response to subsequent oral notice or other, means of, at that point, signifying your intent to exclude, there's already been a trespass. There's already been, not a criminal trespass, but there's already been infringement on your property right because the person has been on your premises contrary to the owner's desire to exclude. I mean, for example, if there were an ordinance that said, let's say you have a beautiful lawn and you live right next to a park, and people frequently want to have a picnic on your lawn. If there were an ordinance that said, in order to give adequate notice of your intent to exclude folks from your lawn, you have to post a 6-foot image of Donald Duck. You don't want to post an image of Donald Duck. And so there are individuals who come and have a picnic on your lawn. Even if you then call the police and they are removed, there's already been an infringement. There's already been someone's unwanted presence.
Well, why does that mean that you can always sue them for trespass, can't you? What are you deprived of? Because you're deprived of the ability to complain to the police and arguably have a person charged with a criminal misdemeanor, right?
Correct. You're deprived of criminal sanctions backing your property.
Right, but the law has an absolute defense in it that if the person voluntarily leaves when you have the conforming sign posted, they can't be charged.
Correct, and I think that goes to the point that even assuming that
Then you're in the same position that if you don't have a sign at all, because they're not going to be charged. They did trespass, and all you can do, you can sue them for damages.
Well, if you have the ability to post legally conforming, legally adequate notice in the form of your choosing, then there would be a crime after the entrant walks past that sign and ignores it. And that criminal sanction does have a deterrent effect. And we know that not only because the Supreme Court and other courts have acknowledged that the criminal law has a deterrent effect, but also because the record in this case reflects, there are pages of evidence reflecting that licensed firearm owners in Texas know where what conforming signage looks like,
But then you're only talking, you said, you narrowed it down now to where you get to post the sign of your choosing. So then you're only talking about one sign, what it looks like versus another, correct? You're not complaining about, I have to post a sign. You're just complaining about what it looks like and what the text is.
So that's true. The First Amendment burden is not having to post that is complained of in the complaint. It's not having to post a sign at all. It's posting a sign which is large, contains government-scripted text.
Do you get to challenge all the other signs of government regulation over here? Do you get to challenge all the other signs government regulations impose? Labor signs, employees must wash their hands before returning to work. I mean, do you get to design every sign as the way you want to do it?
Well, I think the question here would be, would we have standing to challenge a sign that employees must wash their hands?
But if you have standing to challenge this one, why not all the others?
You may have standing, but then immediately lose on a 12b6 motion because your constitutional claim is obviously infirm. So again, if you were going to change the employees wash their hands sign, you would have to, consistent with Rule 11, file a pleading that articulated a basis for your...
Well, I mean, what you're talking about is we don't like the aesthetics of what the statute says, so we want to just post the sign we want to post, substantively the same.
Right, and so that's the First Amendment...
I'm not following the injury.
The First Amendment protects not only the message that you want to express, but it also protects the manner in which you want to express it. And I can give a few examples of that. So one classic case, Barnett... The plaintiff there had actually, in footnote 4 of that case, there is an example of the version of the Pledge of Allegiance that they are willing to recite, and it does contain a statement of loyalty to the United States of America, but they also want...
But that's compelled. You're not compelled to post a sign at all. You can give oral notice.
So I think that was just a slightly different question, which I'm happy to address, but I think the question just is whether there's a First Amendment injury when the government forces you to express something that you don't disagree with, but in a manner that you find burdensome. Another example would be the TASAM case, where Justice O'Connor noted that there is only a very minimal expressive difference when the last inch is dropped, in her phrasing. That was the New Dancing case. But that First Amendment interest was still sufficient to trigger O'Brien and the application of First Amendment scrutiny. So there doesn't have to be a complete ban on your ability to express a message or a compelled forcing of a message with which you disagree in order for there to be a First Amendment, a cognizable First Amendment harm.
So what happens if you don't comply? Is it that you or your client goes to jail or suffers some sanction, or is it that somebody else doesn't go to jail? I'm sympathetic to either concern, but I'm just trying to understand what's the injury at issue here.
So the injury is that if we post non-conforming signs, well, I think I would phrase it two ways. So one, if we post non-conforming signs, there's ample evidence in the record reflecting that law-abiding Texas licensed firearm owners will enter your property, and so you are suffering an injury there. And also, just to take a step back...
But I'm sorry, I want to make sure I understand, because I have a very precise concern about the case. If you don't comply, does something happen to your client, or is it that something doesn't happen to the perpetrator,
trespasser? Right. So the point, I think, if Your Honor may have in mind, Lefebvre and that line of cases
however you pronounce it. So you understand my concern is,
yes.
I didn't like Lefebvre either, even though I wrote it.
Right.
But we're bound by Linda R.S. Maybe Linda R.S. is wrong. Certainly academics have said it's profoundly wrong. I think the legal system is inadequately sensitive to the needs of crime victims. But we're bound by precedent.
Understood. And I think that there's a crucial distinction between this case and cases like Lefebvre and United States v. Texas, where the relief in those cases and Linda R.S. sought was the prosecution of specific individuals. So, for example, in United States...
But I thought the point of Linda R.S. was you simply have no interest in the prosecution of any other individual.
You don't have standing to insist that the prosecutor prosecute.
Right. Rightly or wrongly, that's what the Supreme Court seems to have said in Linda R.S.
I guess my question to you is, I don't think we've discussed the prosecution issue. The issue is that the police will come, and the police and the prosecutor are two different folks. So is it your concern that people who enter your property will not be excluded under trespass, as I guess would be your right to do, or is your issue more about whether or not the person will be prosecuted?
Well, I guess a couple of points in response to this. So one, taking a step back, this is unlike Linda R.S. or in Lefebvre, this is an unconstitutional conditions case. So in some sense, the injury is inflicted by the conditioning of the government benefit
on your foregoing a constitutionally protected right. So in most constitutional conditions cases, you don't have any entitlement to the thing that the government is threatening to withhold.
But isn't that true here also?
Correct.
Yes. That's my concern. Well, no, right. But I don't think that helps you. I think it hurts you, rightly or wrongly. The thing that you don't have an interest in is the prosecution or arrest of some other person. You obviously have an interest in your own prosecution. Everybody would agree with that. But Linda R.S. says you don't have an interest in somebody else being prosecuted. I think that's a little weird. I think we have an interest in the prosecution of people who hurt us. But that's the law.
But that's what they said. So I guess what I was attempting to say is that under the constitutional conditions line of cases, you don't need to have an enforceable interest or an entitlement. You know, just as you don't have an entitlement to the prosecution of any particular individual, you don't have an entitlement to food stamps. But the government couldn't condition the provision.
I thought the injury you're saying is antecedent and independent from the eventual or actual prosecution. Mm-hmm. I thought the injury was, for example, to the church, the pocketbook injury of buying $100 signs for every entrance.
Yes.
And for the business, the injury is customers. We know from Reddit, whatever forum, they're not going to go in when they see the sign. Those are antecedent. So it's, or myself, surrounded by fraternities. If they want to jump on my back trampoline in the backyard, I will only go exercise my fundamental right to exclude if I'm confident that the police would back me up.
Well,
I thought could I get an answer to my question? Is that the Article III interests antecedent to whether or not there's actual prosecution?
So yes, and that was good. So I think my first sort of portion of my answer was to say that unconstitutional conditions cases do not require an entitlement, and then I think the next part of my answer would be precisely that set of points, which is that because of having been put to this choice, we are. Undergoing a, you know, we have sacrificed either in the case of the coffee shop, its right to free expression in the manner in which it chooses, or in the case of the church, its right of expression on the one hand for open carry and its right to exclude for concealed carry.
Ms. Taylor, let us be clear about the law. Posting this particular signage is not the only basis for an illegal trespass by someone carrying a weapon, either concealed or open. You may also give oral notice.
That is true.
Are you compelled to speak if you politely ask someone who has a gun to leave the premises? What is unconstitutional about giving oral notice, which is, if I'm not mistaken, also part of the ordinary trespass law?
So I think a couple of responses. One, there is unrebutted testimony in the record that the plaintiffs have, not only do they fear confrontations if oral notice is given, but there have actually been confrontations where would-be entrants, who are turned away, behave in a hostile manner. But the other point that I would make is that is still part of the more burdensome regime that these property owners are put to, so that where other property owners who wish to exclude for other reasons are free to use the signage of their choosing, I don't think it cures the harm to say this group, though, has to use oral notice.
Council, can
let me move on to another point, which is you say you're not trying to affect prosecutions, but one in your complaint, that one of the aspects of relief requested is enter an injunction against enforcement of the heightened notice requirement and requiring the property owners seeking to exclude guns from their properties need only comply with the notice requirements under the general trespass law. So basically, you're trying to rewrite Texas criminal law.
We have pleaded that we requested
because,
that relief.
I mean, no law. I mean, there's a big redressability problem because even if the court entered this injunction, it would be useless because law enforcement authorities are not allowed to enforce the criminal law that doesn't exist.
So I think there's a couple of points to that I'd like to make in response to that, Your Honor. One, I don't think that there's any general problem with federal courts invalidating portions of federal criminal law.
But you're saying we want to go beyond that, not just invalidate this law, but we get covered under a law which doesn't cover us.
Well, I think that, again, the question of remedies would come up if we were to prevail.
No, it's redress. It goes to redressability. Can the court do anything that is worthwhile to solve your alleged injury?
So if you, for example, in the Sessions versus Morales Santana case from the Supreme Court, there was a gender discriminatory provision in U.S. immigration law. And the court, having found that that violated equal protection, then went on to say, there is a difficult question about remedies here, because if we invalidate one portion of the law, we would be broadening the availability of relief, and if we, and making it available to everyone, and if we invalidate another portion of the law, we would be denying the availability of relief to everyone. But that was a question that could be handled through on remand. I think here, so again, if we win, there would be a question of severability, which would be analyzed under Texas statutory interpretation principles. And while we've requested relief in our complaint that the notice requirements, the heightened notice requirements be, redlined, if you will, it's certainly possible that a court applying Texas principles of statutory interpretation could conclude that some other way of curing the defects of the scheme is more appropriate.
So you don't have a specific way that we could redress your client's injury? Because we have to be able to say redressability is one of the, it's not something we do at the end, we do that at the beginning. So there has to be some redressability, some way. We couldn't order the police to arrest people contrary to the statute, could we? And so we would have to, how would we redress that?
Correct. So I think in our merits panel briefing, we do provide sort of what we think of a red line of the statute.
Could you help us? The only redressability is you want us to redline the statute, but you haven't sued the promulgators of the statute, have you?
No, but this is sort of how ordinarily injunctive and declaratory relief in an action brought under Ex parte Young would work. So if there is a state statute that violates a federal constitutional principle, then I think the redressability point is there's some absolute barrier to the federal court affording some relief, and there is no such absolute barrier. In fact, you are prohibited under Ex parte Young from suing the Texas legislature or the attorney general based on some general grievance. You sue for targeted declaratory.
Okay, so what would you say would be how would we instruct the police in a way that would redress your injury that would be allowable for us to do?
Well, so I think your question actually goes back to a point that I had wanted to make in response to Judge Ho's question, which is that we are not asking for an injunction that binds the police in their prosecutorial and the prosecutors in their enforcement discretion. And that's a very important distinction from cases like U.S. v. Texas, Linda R.S., and in the case of Lifter Burr, it wasn't injunctive relief, but it was damages flowing from one specific instance of failure to prosecute. What we are asking is for the constitutional infirmity in the law to be declared and for specific provisions in the law to be enjoined. So we propose that 3006C3 and 3007C3 could be enjoined. So by red line, I didn't mean that you're actually going to get out a red pen and send something to the Texas legislature, but more that would be the language that he identified as that can't be enforced. But again, I don't think that it's possible that the answer to what the Texas legislature would have wanted, given the constitutional infirmity in the statute, might have a different answer. If you think about that.
Counsel, can we go back to Judge Wilson? Oh, sorry, over here. Can we go back to Judge Wilson's question? So Texas law specifically requires that every single gas pump in our great state have a sticker, a very specific sticker, has the Texas Department of Agriculture, has the commissioner's name on it.
And it's caused some controversy in our state because there's a lot of people who don't like the sticker. They don't like the content of the sticker. They don't like the fact that it's impinging on their property rights in the gas pump. It's detracting from the commercial value of the little videos that are showed, little ads. First Amendment injury, yes? To challenge the sticker?
Yes, I would say there's a First Amendment injury, but again, that doesn't dictate one way or another how the merits of that case.
But how would the merits be any different? This is Judge Wilson's question. I have exactly the same one, which is how are the merits any different? So you told us compelled speech, you have no choice, the sticker or the highway, pardon the pun, diminishment of a property right. Discriminatory, too, by the way. You don't get to put up a sticker for Sid Miller's primary opponent or put up a sticker for Sid Miller's opponent in the general election. It's deeply discriminatory, under your theory. Yes or no, exactly the same merits. You might win or lose, but it's exactly the same as this case.
I think, again, I'm not as familiar with the statutory scheme, whether it's an unconstitutional conditions case, but I do think that there would be a First Amendment injury so that you could bring a suit. And again, that doesn't forecast in any way the answer to the merits question.
Before you sit down, could you flip the Wolford case where states are making it illegal to enter without consent? Would a property owner that wants to give general consent have standing to challenge the Hawaii or California laws?
So the Hawaii case where individualized
where states
consent
have said
is required,
it's illegal to enter without consent, but the property owner wants to give general consent. Does that property owner have standing under the same theory?
Yes, I think that they would. I think that there might be a First Amendment injury, there might be an associational injury, there would be a certain...
The home is the castle. Anytime the government wants to regulate who goes in and out of the home, the castle, there's an injury sufficient to sue.
Well, if it is placing conditions on how you can give or not give permission to come in, there should be sufficient injury to sue. And again, that doesn't say that the merits will go one way or another.
But in that case, they sued Hawaii. And so, didn't they? And how is this injury traceable to these defendants?
Because under this court's precedence and the precedence of the United States Supreme Court, it's not necessary that all that is necessary is that the particular defendant have a connection with enforcement of the law. So I mentioned the KP case. Another case might be Bennett v. Spear.
What relief can we give against the law enforcement officers? You say we can't compel them to prosecute. What injunction relief do you want against them?
So the injunction would, and I think this is continuing to get at the first question, the injunction would not say, so in U.S. v. Texas, for example, the injunction sought there was going to compel immigration enforcement officials to detain every single non-citizen who had committed certain deportable offenses and take away their enforcement discretion. We're not asking for the police to be bound to remove every single trespasser.
Well, actually, you are.
What are you asking?
Because
I just want an answer. What are you asking?
Your complaint. Your complaint.
She can answer, and then you can ask follow-up.
Let
her answer Judge Richmond's question, and then you can follow up.
Just what you're not asking for. What are you asking for?
What we're asking for is against
law enforcement officers.
So what would happen in this case, and what makes it distinct from U.S. v. Texas, for example, is that the elements of the statute that are the predicate for a complete crime would be altered.
They don't have anything to do. What are the police officers? The chief of police, what does he have to do with any of that?
So the police, we have record evidence that they are trained very carefully on the elements of trespass and what signage leads to a complete crime of trespass under 3006 and 3007. So the officers would, at that point, they could come and they could either arrest or not arrest somebody.
Okay, I got it. I got your point. I don't agree with it, but I got it.
Right.
And I think Judge Jones has a question.
Your complaint seeks a declaration that the notice requirements under 3006 and 3007 are unconstitutional and property owners only have to follow the general trespass law requirements.
Correct.
Which means that you would have the police come and arrest people carrying guns onto your property, even though the general trespass statute does not apply to them.
In other words, you can redline these other two provisions all you want to do, but you cannot create a crime where there is none in Texas law. And besides that, what?
So I think what, if again, if we strike the notice provisions in 3006 and 3007C3, then there's remaining language in those provisions that would say that written notice can be provided. So our position is not that we're rewriting 3005, and it means that there would be, but again, if, I don't think that the redressability analysis turns on whether the court agrees with the specific way in which we ask for our relief, because the court could disagree, and that's what the Morales-Santana case indicates.
But you are asking us, to rewrite 3005, because basically, without the gun, the person who wants to come to your business is an invitee, and you would serve them coffee or whatever you would do. In other words, you're wanting to make them a trespasser because they have a gun, and that's not in 3005. Isn't that right?
So, again, I think...
They would otherwise be perfectly legally on your property, on the premises, in the church, whatever, except for this one condition you want to enforce, but just outside the Texas law.
So we're not asking for 3006 and 3007 in their entirety to be struck. What we're asking for are the subsections of those two provisions. So those provisions recriminalize entrance.
It's quite a lot of legislation. It's quite a lot of legislation for the court as opposed to the legislature.
I think this is ordinary. If you take the City of Chicago Police Department versus Mosley case, right? In that case, there was a general ban on picketing within 150 feet of a school, and then there was an exception for labor picketers. So the Supreme Court did not, didn't stop to say, well, if we can't do anything with this because we're either going to have to allow somebody to picket who the legislature didn't want to, or we're going to have to, eliminate the exemption for labor picketers. There was standing, unquestioned standing, and ultimately, relief could be crafted on the facts of the case. Again, these are questions of Texas severability law, and this is routine. When you file a lawsuit against state law under Ex parte Young, you can obtain an injunction that invalidates the application of certain provisions. And then there will be questions that remain about exactly what the statutory scheme is going to do. In fact, in the Arifat case...
I think you... Oh, I'm sorry. Has she answered your question? Or said, You've saved time for rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Taylor. Mr. Hightower.
May it please the court. I'm going to speak briefly to the fact that there is no injury that would support Article 3 standing and speak to the lack of asymmetric injury here. Mr. Gassamo will speak to the constitutional issues, and Mr. Higgins will speak to the lack of addressability. It's important to recognize, as I think several of the judges here have already observed, the relevant statutes here, Penal Code Section 3006 and 3007, can never be enforced against the appellants. Likewise, they make no obligation, there is no burden on the appellants, because they are criminal statutes to be enforced against alleged trespassers.
Well, if the appellants want to trespass a guest who has a knife, they don't have to pay the money and put up the signs that they do have to do if they want to trespass someone with a handgun. Is that correct?
That would be a trespass like. The general patent.
I'm just asking, doesn't that sound like a little more burden if you want to trespass someone with a handgun as opposed to trespass someone with a knife?
The difference there, Your Honor, is that in Texas, the status quo is we have statutory open and concealed carry of handguns. And that's what this case is really about. They're not talking about knives or clubs or even rifles. They're talking about handguns, both concealed. And the Texas legislature has acted to legalize the open and concealed carry. And that's what the appellants don't like. But that is the status quo, and that status quo...
I agree with you, that is the issue. But how is that not even any injury to the right that Justice Scalia said every founder of this country would have assumed? Quote, our law holds the property of every man so sacred, no man can set his foot upon his neighbor's clothes without his leave. How is that not even an injury when the government requires these special signs?
Because the government doesn't require these signs.
Well, in order to trespass somebody, it does.
No, actually it doesn't, Your Honor, because there are two possible points of notice there. Written notice through the signs, or through oral notice. But there's a third option.
Well, wait, on the oral notice, the time that they tried to orally notice someone, the guy comes back with a sword.
But that's the case under the general statute as well.
That's the only way I can exclude people from my home, right? When my neighbors run the dogs to poop in my yard.
Exactly. That goes to the nature of trespass law. There's a third option that they don't talk about, and that is in the state of Texas, under the common law, a property owner always retains the right to exclude unwanted trespassers from their property. They can exclude them, and if the trespasser won't leave, they can call law enforcement officers, just like the Houston Police
What if a government were to simply repeal all criminal trespass law?
All criminal trespass law?
Yeah, just, you know what? We're not inviting trespass, but you know what? If there's criminal trespass, we're not going to arrest it. It is no longer a crime in this jurisdiction. I think the idea is it's a Linda R.F. problem also.
Well, that would go to the problem of the appellants who clearly want to criminalize the conduct of the trespassers in this particular situation. Again, under the common law, there is nothing that prevents a property owner from recognizing they have a trespasser, for any particular reason, calling the police, asking them to remove them, and there is nothing in the appellant's complaint that suggests that that won't happen.
At least as to one of these cases, sir, I can't remember whether it's the coffee shop or the church. There is evidence in the record that there has never been a refusal of the police to come when they were called.
I'm happy to address the evidence. Yes. It's important to remember that in the case of the city of Houston, on behalf of the chief of police, on a motion to judgment of the pleadings, while there has been some discussion of evidence, it doesn't really relate. We are bound by the appellant's pleadings. And if you look at their complaint, there is not a single allegation that the Houston Police Department will not respond to remove a trespasser when requested by a property owner. It's simply not there.
How do you respond to the appellant's argument about what happened in the Cheddar's situation?
I think the Cheddar's example shows exactly how this is supposed to work. In the Cheddar's example, the restaurant had a 30.7 sign against the open carry. According to the police report, which is really all we have to go on, a gentleman came in wearing a gun and a holster underneath his shirt. He leans over at some point. The shirt rises up, the gun becomes evident, the manager calls police. The Webster police came and responded, checked this out, saw what had happened, spoke to the patron. Patron realized he needed to keep his gun covered. Went to the manager of the restaurant, who did not ask to have the patron removed. And in the police report, it talks about, and this is in the record, at pages 14, 25, and 26, on the basis of the managers not asking them to remove the patron, the police didn't. Later on, I believe the police chief for Webster testified to the fact that if they asked for him to be removed, Webster police would have removed.
I thought it was the opposite. I thought Bacon said his officers wouldn't be able to enforce without the 06 sign.
On the basis of the statute alone.
Yeah.
But again, the police can always remove an unwanted guest as a trespasser under the common law. And again, there is not an allegation in the complaint that governs, at least as to my party, but the other parties I believe are under 12b-6, to govern their claims here. So while there's been a lot of argument about this, an appeal. There is no allegation to support this argument on appeal.
So we're not supposed to look at the evidence, but whatever we have in the record and how it's been done is that the police remove people at the request of the premises owner,
And there's nothing
and,
to dispute.
That's, and that's, that happens every time, and it's not, no one, they're not flouting or saying, we don't want to keep coming back to your place or
that's
anything
correct.
Like that.
And so, in fact, if you go back to the complaint itself, the complaint, in the complaint, appellants say, individuals can summon police to remove individuals from the premises. That's in the record at page 43. As to the church has greeters that have been trained to look and see if maybe the person has a handgun. And if they have a handgun, they can tell them, you know, we don't allow that here. But if they're uncomfortable, they don't need to address them. And they say in their complaint, they are instructed to call 911. That's in the record at page 45.
Can I go back to my helper real quick?
Yes.
So, again, a jurisdiction just decides to repeal the criminal trespass law altogether. As a homeowner, I take it I could not sue either under the same Linda R.S. theory.
Well, again, you would have a common law right if you have somebody come onto your property for any reason at all.
No, it's been repealed.
I'm sorry?
It's been repealed.
But you again, I'm talking about the common law. You don't need
I'm
all,
talking
all
about repeal. The legislature can repeal the common law. It's gone.
Oh, so you're talking about all,
yeah,
all,
listen
all
to my hypothetical.
Trespass law.
Please stop. Just listen to my hypothetical. I'm not going to take a lot of time. Criminal trespass law is hereby repealed in all its forms, common law, any law, natural law, whatever. It's all gone. Can a homeowner sue? I'm assuming your answer is no, Linda R.S.
To sue the city, the chief of police, or to sue the trespasser themselves?
To sue to challenge this repeal. You violated my property rights.
I'm not sure. I think it would depend on who the party is, who they're trying to sue there, and that's why I'm asking. I'm not sure if they're suing the government, the law enforcement.
The appropriate defendant. The law enforcement, fine.
I don't see the basis of a legal claim there for a lawsuit. I think that the situation there is call your representative and have some manner of...
It's the same Linda R.S. theory.
Exactly.
That's fine.
And I think the thing that can't be lost in this conversation is, this goes to the... well, let's talk about the asymmetric treatment for a second. As Judge Jones pointed out in her dissent to the panel opinion, asymmetry would come into play if you had similar circumstances, similar claimants, maybe that they're being treated differently under the standard. You have different standards, but then you have different signs, and that creates the apples and oranges example that Judge Jones talks about. Here we have 3005, the general criminal trespass statute that sort of is a catch-all that applies to everything. No flip-flops, no pets, no shoes, no shirt, no service. None of that is a statutory or a constitutional right that's being barred. But in this case, 0607, we are talking about a legislatively created right to carry concealed or open handguns that demands a different standard, and that is why the heightened notice is there. So it's this conflict between what we have, as the appellants are asking for, a lesser standard, a less defined standard, which there really isn't much of one under 05, or a heightened standard, the specific standard that is provided in 0607. Again, the reality in the state of Texas is that citizens have a right to carry an open or concealed handgun anywhere they want to, unless the property owner affirmatively opts out of the system as prescribed in 0607.
Thank
they
you, Mr. Hightower. We have your argument.
I apologize. I did not see the clock.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please affirm the judgment.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Mustafa Kassala, and I represent Harris County District Attorney and Harris County Sheriff. Fundamentally, plaintiffs are asking the court to improperly rewrite Texas law through judicial intervention rather than remedy a concrete injury. Texas trespass statutes regulate the actions of individuals entering a private property. These statutes do not require property owners to take any specific action, nor do they impose duties, mandates, or penalties on plaintiffs. Oral notice is valid and sufficient way to exclude individuals from premises. As the district court correctly noted, nothing in the statutes requires plaintiffs to use signage or police enforcement to exclude others. Plaintiff's injury claim can be broken down into three specific areas. First, there's no expressive injury or compelled speech. There's no mandate, penalty, or restriction on plaintiff's message. Second, there's no cognizable injury, be it financial, associational, exclusionary, or reputational under Article 3. Consequently,
they have alleged some pocketbook injuries, haven't they?
They have, but the statute did not require them to purchase these signs.
How else would they come to have the signs to put up if they did not purchase them? What's the alternative?
They can provide oral notice.
They could do what?
Oral notice.
I understand your argument.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing in the law that prohibits them from having a little gun and then a red circle with a slash, right?
Exactly.
They can do whatever they want. It's just that they don't get criminal trespass if the person refuses to leave.
Absolutely. Players are allowed to post any message they want. They're allowed to post the very messages that they're complaining about. The only difference is there's no criminal penalty for the messages that they're willing to post. Their message does not satisfy notice. They can provide any messaging that they want. The statute does not mandate that they not communicate a specific message or that they not or communicate in a manner which they don't want to.
My question is, I'm still having a hard time seeing what relief against any specific defendant in this case could be granted. What do any of these defendants have to do with these issues?
I would agree, Judge. I mean, here, the police, and we're not the promulgators of the law, the police chief for Webster testified that police show up, regardless of signage, and enforce the law in the same manner, regardless of whether signs, they're the sign there or notice of given.
But they're not suing to require the police to show up, are they?
They're not there. But the idea of the deterrent effects ultimately is a right to prosecution. There's no way around that. There's no way around stating that the deterrent effect here is prosecution. That's what they're asking for. And there's no right to prosecution.
I thought they were just asking for a declaratory judgment to declare that the ordinance was unconstitutional.
Sure, but the basis of the argument is an interest in the deterrent effects of police protection. The deterrent effect of police protections based on this case is an outcome where there's an eventual prosecution. Here, the Texas statutes do not force plaintiffs. There's no expressive or compelled injuries. The statutory scheme is fundamentally permissive, not coercive. The statutes do not require the posting of signage and post penalties for silence or restrict plaintiffs' rights to convey their message. Plaintiffs remain free to communicate no guns, articulate moral or religious viewpoints, design their own signage, or choose not to speak at all. Unlike other cases such as Reed, where the plaintiff relies upon, Texas statutes are fundamentally different. They do not impose requirements or sanction property owners, and they're not content-based. They do not regulate speech, restrict messages, forbid any viewpoint, or limit any mode of expression. Plaintiffs have unfettered discretion to design and display signs of any size, wording, or format, or to communicate their position through any other means. Without a mandate or penalty, there's no expressive, no contact-based restriction, and no compelled speech. The plaintiff's objection is primarily that focus on size, format, and visual presentation. Their concern is not being compelled to speak, but rather that their preferred form of aesthetic expression is insufficient to trigger criminal penalties. The First Amendment does not guarantee such a right. Furthermore, there's no injury to the association of freedom or right of exclusion. Plaintiffs assert that their statutory signage rules hinder their capacity to promote messages of nonviolence and inclusivity. They claim that without these signs, they cannot completely disassociate from firearms, which they believe infringes on their freedom of association and property rights. Additionally, they contend that not having the signage removes a deterrent effect provided by criminal trespass liability. But these concerns are not supported by the record. The church administrator, as previously mentioned, and the chief of police both confirmed that law enforcement responds promptly after trespass calls, regardless of the statutory signage posted. The right to exclude or dissociate is only harmed if the state requires access or prevents removal. Texas law does not compel property owners to admit armed individuals or restrict their ability to express any message, including those about nonviolence and inclusivity. The Penal Code allows owners to exclude anyone at any time for any reason. Oral notice is sufficient, and refusal to leave is a crime, and police will respond regardless of signage. The desire for deterrence is not a legally protected interest. Any deterrent effect comes from prosecuting third parties, not from the infringement of plaintiff's own rights. The Supreme Court has already rejected this such interest as pretending. Ultimately, the plaintiff's objection is to legislative policy, not a constitutional violation. The right to exclude and the freedom of association remain intact, regardless of signing requirements. Next, we address the pocket book injury. Plaintiffs contend that the financial costs associated with posting signs are cognizable injury. First, the statutes do not require plaintiffs to purchase any signs. As previously mentioned, statutes allow for oral notice. And even if the plaintiffs do not provide oral notice directly to the patron, they can call the police and the police will advise the patron to leave. And at that point, if they still refuse to leave, they can't be arrested. When a here, plaintiffs are not legally obligated to bear signs costs or face prosecution for not doing so. Again, the statute is intended to govern the entrance to the property. It does not govern the plaintiffs here. It does not govern the property owners. There is no duty on the property owners to act in any specific way. Any expenses incurred are voluntary and not legally compelled. Self-imposed costs do not constitute a judicial or criminal injury. Next, express the reputational harm. Plaintiffs contend that their reputations have been harmed by online criticism of their signage, like in the statutory signs of a scarlet letter. Intangible harm should bear a close relationship with traditionally recognized injuries, most notably defamation. Plaintiffs bear the burden of establishing that their described reputational harm qualifies under Article 3. Plaintiffs' theory fails to meet this standard. Unlike Meese, where the government designated specific films as political propaganda, thereby directly stigmatizing the plaintiff, here the government, there is no designation, there is no state, and there's some level of confusion between messaging and the signs. Any harm arises from private reactions to plaintiff's voluntary signs and message, not from state action. Standing is absent where the injury results from the independent action of some third party. In this case, I believe plaintiffs rely on third party auditors. Additionally, the plaintiff's alleged reputational harm theory relies on speculative and conjectural assumption, that is, the aesthetic design of statutory signs rather than their content, that is the cause of their reputation or their perceived reputational harm. Reputational injury claim here is self-inflicted and lacks the historical or legal parallel necessary to establish reputational harm for standing. Finally, we address the unconstitutional position. Doctrine is triggered only when the government denies or grants a deny a benefit unless the plaintiff surrenders a constitutional right. Appellants say plaintiffs have been denied no benefit. The benefit they must surrender is a deterrent effect on criminal law, which rests entirely on law enforcement's discretion to arrest and prosecute their parties. The case law is clear. Plaintiffs do not have a legally deniable interest in this benefit. Again, the statutory scheme is fundamentally permissive, not coercive. Statutes do not mandate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kasama. We have your argument.
Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
May it please the court. I would like to address the last two elements of standing, regressibility and traceability or causation. And those are really intertwined elements, so I may address them together sometimes. I think beginning with regressibility, I think one way to consider this case is begin at the end of the case. Begin at the end where plaintiffs have their best day in court, and they get the declaratory judgment and the injunction that they want. declaration that the so-called signage requirements can't be applied or are invalid, and an injunction against enforcing these so-called requirements. What do they get? Well, what they have is a single way to establish trespass, simple set of elements. And the set of elements that is required is going onto the property, being asked to leave, refusing to leave. That's the completed crime under their best day. Now, counsel for appellants have said, have tried to address this by saying, well, this would be a matter, the actual remedy is a matter of severability, state law severability. Well, I think the inability to articulate what remedy the court, what remedy a court could craft speaks volumes here. Because the court cannot craft a remedy for the grievance in this case. This is a grievance that needs to be addressed. The proper form is the legislature, the Texas legislature. The Texas legislature can rewrite a criminal statute. The Texas legislature can change the elements of a criminal offense. That is what the ultimate relief that they would be required to have. And this is something a court cannot give these plaintiffs. Now, I think the second point is, and plaintiffs, counsel for plaintiffs has actually made the concession that we are asking the court to rewrite or to change, to reform the statute. Something the court can't do, but number two, these are not the defendants to sue for that relief. These are, in the words of the district court, these are local defendants with no control over the language of the statute. They're not the promulgators of the law. They need to follow the law, and they need to apply the law to trespassers as the law is written. And they need to make a finding of probable cause and make an arrest based using their discretion and as the law is written. So there really is, and that also that goes to traceability as well. These defendants are not the cause of the grievance. And I would note that previously, early in the case, the Attorney General was a defendant in the case. The district court dismissed the Attorney General and the other state defendant on 11th Amendment grounds. They appealed, and the plaintiffs chose to dismiss them.
Could I just ask you over here? If that's your position, the church is in your client's jurisdiction, correct?
Yes.
Church, and then this Cheddar's restaurant.
Yes.
Okay. And Chief Bacon testified that without the 06 sign at the restaurant, his officers would not have been able to remove the trespasser. So I'd ask you to apply that to the property professor's amicus brief, Judge Easterbrook, that the right to exclude means nothing without the right to enforce. So if the chief of police Bacon is saying his officers can't enforce trespass without that sign, doesn't that at least injure these commercial establishments?
Chief Bacon's testimony was a little bit different. Chief Bacon said we would not have the right to remove these individuals unless the property owner asked for that.
Exactly.
That's what Chief Bacon testified to. And so the Chief Bacon's testimony is that, yes, we would remove it at the request of the landowner. And I think there's something else that was important from the record and from Chief Bacon's affidavit. And that is that Chief Bacon testified the police respond to any call of trespass, whether it's no shirt or no shoes, whether it's having a dog with you, they respond in the same way. They come to the site, they come to the location, they ask the person to leave. By doing that, they establish one of the predicate elements themselves by asking the plaintiff to leave. And if the plaintiff does not leave, if the suspect does not leave, then they will make an arrest. And that's true of every form of every ground or every trespass call, whatever the complaint is.
Well, and irrespective whether it's 30.05, 06, or 07, if the person won't leave, he's disobeying a request of the officer, right?
Well, that's correct. That's correct. But I think more importantly is that the practice of my client, or my client's police force, is to establish probable cause for themselves by making a request, giving the opportunity, and if they don't comply, making the arrest.
Mr. Higgins, I think I'm trying to encapsulate this case in a hypothetical, so bear with me for a second. Let's say you have two business owners. One has a compliance sign under 3006, 3007 posted. The other one does not. Someone walks in both businesses with a concealed carry or open carry. In the business with the compliance sign, the owner says, the owner calls the police. In the business with no sign, the business owner says, please leave. They don't, and calls the police. It seems to me the basic position of the plaintiffs is that those two, the business owner who doesn't have the sign up has suffered a diminishment in their right to exclude. What is your response to that?
Well, first of all, they have not suffered a diminishment in the right to exclude. I think it's good.
Tell me why not. What's your argument?
Well, they do have tort remedies, number one. They do have tort remedies. And also, I don't think that there is any practical diminution in the right to exclude, because what occurs is, in any event, even if the sign's up, the police will come and they will ask the person to leave. And if the person does not leave, they will make the arrest. And I think we can look at YouTube police videos, and that's what we will see. You enter trespass calls, you will see that. The police show up. They tell the person, don't leave. You need to leave. And that's when you arrest the person.
But no diminishment if the customer shows, sees the sign, and just doesn't walk into the business. How is that not a diminished injury? They've decided not to go frequent that business. How is that not, under General Land Office versus Biden, a deterred injury?
Well, they would not have entered, yes. But that goes to the question of whether they've got a justiciable interest in prosecution of others. And the answer to that is no. But I would also add that there is a question of traceability here, because the police do have discretion. And a court can't really control the police prospectively in the exercise of their discretion of whether to make the arrest immediately or not make the arrest immediately. And if the complaint here is about the conduct of the police and the police application of the statute, well, they're not asking for relief that addresses that. They're asking for a rewritten statute. And the record shows that the church's director testified she was satisfied with the police response. Every time the church called, for whatever reason, the police came, they acted. So the evidence in the record, at least with the evidence in the record with respect to the church, undisputed evidence, is there's no different treatment by the police in this case.
And this case, as to the church, it was a summary judgment. Isn't that correct?
It was a...
Evidence was admitted, isn't it?
It was, I believe, a 12B1 motion. There's also a summary judgment. But the evidence was admitted, and the evidence could be considered in that situation.
I think we have your argument, sir. Your time is up.
Oh, well, I apologize. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Taylor, you said time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
like the evidence in the record and the differing procedural postures for the differing defendants. The district court did consider all of the evidence with respect to all of the defendants, because with respect to Houston, which had filed a motion for judgment on the pleadings, we had sought leave to amend, and the district court, that amended complaint contained the evidence that was considered with respect to the other defendants, and the district court held that amendment would be futile because even accepting all of that as true, we still would lack standing. So effectively, the defendants are similarly situated with respect to the evidence in the record.
And is that to say it was dismissed on a 12B motion or Rule 56? Which one are you saying?
Houston was dismissed on a 12C motion that was actually filed before discovery and then granted after discovery.
12C?
12C.
All right.
And then the other defendants were both treated as filing 12B1 motions with the evidence in the record under consideration. But then because of the proposed amended complaint, the same evidence was deemed insufficient to support standing when the district court denied our motion to amend against Houston on the basis of futility. With respect to addressability, just a couple of points. One, we've sought both declaratory judgment and injunctive relief, and so the court could, you know, if we have standing to pursue either one of those forms of relief, then the case should go forward.
I guess, Ms. Taylor, the redressability question is, if you win, how will it help your client? So tell me, how will it help your client remedy the alleged injuries if you win? How will it help?
I think one helpful place to look in the record is the Record on Appeal 2216, which is the colorful chart from the police training materials that has checkboxes, and it indicates that the police are, you know, trained precisely on when there is prohibited entry and when there is not. And as the Cheddar's incident report reflects, the police appropriately put that into
I think we've talked about that evidence quite a bit, and it sounds like it reflects that the owner did not orally ask the person to leave. So that doesn't support. I really just sort of in plain language. How will it help your client if you win?
So they would no longer have to choose between exercising the fullest extent of their right to exclude on the one hand, while posting signage that they have an expressive objection to, or giving up some of their right to exclude because there is at least a permissible entry until the point that oral notice is...
Okay, I'll try one more time. I know we're lawyers, so we're talking law, but your client, if they win, what will they do differently and how will their lives be better?
So they will post, presumably, no guns allowed.
Okay, so they'll put up signs.
Right?
Okay.
And then at that point, the law-abiding licensed firearm owners of Texas, who we have evidence to indicate, carefully observe the boundaries of their right to carry, will know that they will commit a trespass if they go in, and they'll be deterred from entering because, again, the evidence indicates that they are following the letter of the law with respect to where they carry. So in other words, and so they would be able to give effective legal notice in a format that does not burden their expression.
But doesn't the Cheddar's example show that you don't have to put up the sign to have the police exclude? I mean, there's a lot of slippage in the way you keep talking in your answers to Judge Duncan. You're conflating the right to an arrest and a prosecution under criminal law with the right to exclude under trespass law. So Chief Bacon says, yeah, I would have absolutely excluded with or without the sign. That is, you get the gun owner who's so offensive to you and your clients out of your shop. You just don't get to prosecute under state criminal law, which you don't, as Judge Ho has illustrated, you don't have a right to do that anyway. So can you be really precise in the way that you're talking to Judge Duncan, I'd really just court, exclude or arrest? What is the thing that you want?
So what we want is the deterrent effect of the criminal law. And that, I think, goes to
And what is your case that says you have an interest in that?
Because it is unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional for the state to condition a benefit on you giving up a constitutional right. Imagine a municipality passed an ordinance that said that there's no complete crime of trespass or burglary unless you put a sign supporting the mayor's reelection on your front lawn.
What if you just repealed? Sorry, I'm going to go back to my earlier hypothetical to opposing counsel. you just repeal criminal trespass altogether.
And in your hypothetical, you're also doing away with civil trespass.
Everything.
Right. So
I think that's the problem with your case is Lynn RS says you don't have an interest in that. Your case is lesser included. That's my concern anyway.
Yeah, so I think that under that hypothetical, I'm not sure what kind of challenge you would bring. It would be,
you're violating all of our rights. Every property owner in the state.
Yes, yeah, so you might have a taking challenge where you can seek just compensation.
But you see the Lynn RS problem.
I do see the Lynn RS
You don't have the
problem.
Right to put other people in prison.
So again, I would just reiterate that it is entirely ordinary for a federal court entertaining a challenge under Ex parte Young to declare invalid certain limited portions of a state statute where they violate the federal constitution or are preempted. And in that case, for example, if we take the Mosley hypothetical, somebody could have sued to say, let's do away with the obviously content discriminatory exception for labor picketers. I don't think that, that would simply change the elements of the statute, but it wouldn't go to the follow-on discretion of the police and prosecutors to enforce the statute as altered under federal law, however they want. And so again, I think we are not asking for the police mandatory police enforcement or prosecution of any specific individuals. What we are asking is that the deterrent effect of the criminal law, which is a benefit, that as a common sense matter, be recognized as impacting behavior in the real world, which
Thank
it obviously
you.
Does.
We have your argument. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This case is submitted. Thank you. Thank you.